And they told me this is not working. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for inviting me to present in the chess debates. I had a nice case. Actually, this was not a very old case. And the reason I wanted to present it is multiples. First of all, it's much more common than what Beatrice just presented. Not as exciting, but much more common. Second, I think will help you a little bit, like it helped me a lot, but I hope it will help you a little bit. So here's my patient. It's a 73-year-old female with a history significant for hypertension and type 2 diabetes who presented with more than 6 months of dry cough. No history of asthma or allergic rhinitis, prior upper respiratory tract infections or exposure to any specific irritants that she can recollect. No fever or chills, no weight loss, night sweats or other associated symptoms, no snoring or excessive daytime sleepiness. Cough is disabling to the patient. She's on medications for her diabetes and for uric acid, and she does not take an ACE inhibitor. She denies any reflux symptoms, and she denies any nasal stuffiness. Physical examination, her vitals were normal. She had a SAT of 97% on room air. She was not tachycardic, afebrile, and her pressures were normal. BMI was slightly on the upper end, but 27.2 is not so bad today. Lungs are clear, no wheezing or ronchi, no crackles. And the H and ENT examination revealed mild retropharyngeal erythema, but no secretions were seen in the pharyngeal area on examination. She is a never smoker. A couple of her kids do smoke occasionally when they visit, but essentially, it's minimal secondhand smoke. She lives down south in a small village. No history of recent travel and no history of any specific exposure that she recollects. She saw several physicians, mostly GPs and internists, and she was prescribed several medications, including antihistamines, cough syrups, nasal sprays, inhalers, bronchodilators, combinations, you name it. She got a little bit of everything. She took the combinations on and off, some transient response, then recurrence. But now she's off all medications, and she coughs almost continuously, even in the office, and the family reports the same throughout the night and day. So my questions are very non-threatening, and they should take 10 seconds flat. How would you proceed? Chest x-ray, spirometry, both, neither? Okay, so both, yes. I think it's a good idea. Chest x-ray is normal. The spirometry is normal. And actually, she had a 5% improvement, which is not a significant response. And her ratios were normal. And her total lung capacity was also normal. So essentially, these were normal results. What next? Allergy testing, sinus imaging, both, neither. Please vote. And again, yes, so we did both. Allergy testing were negative, including skin prick test and total serum IgEs and specific IgEs. And the sinus CT scan revealed minimal thickening of the maxillary sinuses, but otherwise they were normal. So, and this is her skin prick test, and it was completely normal for what we test for, and it's 10 different things. Now what? Methacholine challenge test, pH metry, both, neither. Interestingly, as you know, in our practice, pulmonologists, close to 40% of the pulmonologist's patients present with cough. So whether we like it or not, we have to get good at it, I guess. Okay, so methacholine challenge test was negative, pH metry was not done, but a trial of PPI for a whole month was given without benefit, and the patient swears that she was totally compliant. So the children, well, doctor, mom didn't sleep all night, was short of breath because of the cough. You have got to do something. وعند أسيرانس ما تعت الهم دخلها عتلين هم نحن خايفين كتير على الوالدة فدخلها. So I admitted her. So I was thinking, you know, what could she have? And I will talk about my anxiety in a little bit, as I'm sure some of you share with me. But other things that were not tested for would be something like non-acid reflux, so the NERD, what you call NERD. وسكوت انت هلا قاعد ما في انا معك ولده مش قدامك روق so eosinophilic pulmonary diseases, vocal cord dysfunction, tracheomalacia, ear problems, this is the Arnold's nerve, the break, the vagus part, other psychogenic طبعا بالاخر لانه اوعى تقولوا لهم انه it's psychogenic. Now the reason for my anxiety, as you all know, is that upper airway cough syndrome, can nsemi post nasal drip syndrome, asthma and reflux, alone or in combination, are responsible for over 90% of cases of chronic cough. طبعاً, this was seen in many studies, and Curtis Mello, who actually, this is a study of Curtis Mello as well, talking about the predictive values of the character, timing, and complications of chronic cough in diagnosing its cause. He also had another study whereabouts he showed that in a non-smoker, patient, the post-nasal drip syndrome was the number one reason, and more than 95% of the cases were those three. So post-nasal drip and asthma and reflux. But interestingly, as we all know as well, is that a carefully taken history and a properly performed physical examination do not add that much to what the patient's etiology of the cough is. Contrary to what we tell all our residents and fellows and students, this is not something that history and physical examination is the basic backbone. Now what? Chest CT, bronchoscopy, both, neither. في assurance, so she's in, huh? Don't worry. Okay, so chest CT is normal. All right, chest CT is normal. But that's what the bronchoscopy shows. So essentially the bronchoscopy shows, honey, it's not showing very well, but the mucosa was kind of scary. It was severely erythematous. وطبعاً despite medications and she coughed throughout the bronchoscopy, Hassan was with me and one of the few times that JJ with me. So diffuse bronchial erythema, easy friability, the lavage showed 6% eosinophils, cultures were negative, and the endobronchial biopsy is revealed, this is not blowing very well, I can't even see it very well, but essentially it shows eosinophilic infiltration of the endobronchial biopsies. So essentially we have our diagnosis, and this is what she has. She has eosinophilic bronchitis without asthma or simply eosinophilic bronchitis. And the distinguishing features on the pathology, as you all noticed, is that the membrane is thickened. The basement membrane is thickened, and there is infiltration of the of eosinophils. This is a bit higher magnification. It shows eosinophils everywhere. So this is essentially pathognomonic of EBWA, and this is a condition that I wasn't aware how recent it was, but it was first described by Gibson and his colleagues in 1989. So it's not so old, about 25, 26 years. The same Muslim. So essentially what they described was the following. Isolated chronic cough, plus or minus production of sputum. Normal lung function without variable airflow limitation. Airway hyperresponsiveness is absent. And there is eosinophilia in the sputum and the bronchoalveolar lavage. And the cough reflex to capsaicin is increased. Capsaicin is the lil-har, essentially. Upper airway symptoms are common, middle-aged patients, smoking is unusual, prevalence of atopy is similar to the general population, cough, sputum, eosinophilia, and cough reflex to capsaicin improve with inhaled corticosteroids. That's what Gibson and his colleagues did in 1989, and since then, more studies were done, and this is what's interesting. What's interesting is that this is not uncommon. This is a condition that you probably saw last week, or the week before, at the very least. It's prevalence varies in chronic cough patients from 10% to about 30% or more. So this is quite common. And this is a plethora of studies. Some of them were in the Blue Journal. So what differentiates it from asthma? What we just described. So essentially, it's exactly asthma, but there is no variable airflow obstruction. There is no airway hyperresponsiveness, and this is what can separate asthma from cough variant asthma, as you know. So with cough variant asthma, your spirometry may be normal, you challenge them, and it shows. In asthma, it's clear from the get-go. In eosinophilic bronchitis, there is no hyperresponsiveness, there is no variable airflow obstruction, and I will talk in detail, a bit more detail, I guess, about the mast cell infiltration of the airway smooth muscle later on, because that's a major distinguishing feature that is worth mentioning. You are aware about the algorithm, and this is only a small part of it, but that's what we try to do on a regular basis. So essentially, you have airway obstruction reversibility or peak expiratory flow variability. If it's there, this is asthma, it's easy, you go ahead and treat. If it's not there, you do a methacholine challenge test or a histamine, whatever you do. And if it's positive, you have your cough variant asthma, you treat as well. If not, you go and you get a sputum, you check eosinophilia, or you do a lavage like we did. And if it's more than 3%, you've got your eosinophilic bronchitis patient. Now, interestingly, nitric oxide is increased in all of them. In all of them, nitric oxide is going to be increased, including eosinophilic bronchitis. Now, to go back to the mast cell infiltration, because that's interesting. This is a study that actually came out in the New England Journal, and Christopher Breitling turned out to be in the research in Hamilton. It turned out to be an important thing. So the mast cells, if you look at the... let me see if I can... okay, there you go. So if you look at the left-hand side, you will see that this is the number of mast cells. They are increased. This is eosinophilic bronchitis here, and this is asthma here, and this is normal control. So it is higher, actually, even in eosinophilic bronchitis. The number of mast cells is increased, even a bit more than asthma. It was not statistically significant, though. Now, if you look at the thickness of the basement membrane, again, in eosinophilic bronchitis patients, the basement membrane is thickened more than the controls. But what distinguishes the two is this. When it comes down to the microlocalization of the mast cells in the airway smooth muscle, that's what separates asthmatics from eosinophilic bronchitis and controls. So even though mast cell, the sheer number was increased, and it was even similar or even a bit higher than asthmatics, it was not microlocalized to the smooth muscles. And that's postulated to be an important feature of the bronchoconstriction and hyperresponsiveness that we see in asthmatics and we fail to see in somebody who has exactly the same pathology except for where the mast cells reside. And when, again, Chris Breitling compared the airway immunopathology of eosinophilic bronchitis and asthma, he found no difference. It was exactly the same. And I like the conclusion, because in the conclusion he said, with the exception of our previously reported association of smooth muscle mast cell infiltration with asthma, the immunopathology of EB and asthma are similar, which suggests that eosinophilic airway inflammation, increased exhaled nitric oxide, and increased basement membrane thickening are regulated independently of the airway hyperresponsiveness, because these are present in EB without the airway hyperresponsiveness. So there's something else that's causing the hyperresponsiveness, and the only difference has been so far the mast cell infiltration. Well, there is something else. This is something that also I was not quite versed in, so I hope it's going to help you. But in Japan, they looked at that, and they looked at the role of microvascular permeability on physiologic differences between asthma and EB. And they had four groups. They had normal controls. They had asthmatics. The asthmatics were divided into two groups, those who were given beclomethasone and the group that was not given beclomethasone, and the EB group. So they checked them, and essentially they found that VEGF, the vascular endothelial growth factor levels, and vascular permeability index were significantly higher in the asthmatics who were not given steroids, compared, of course, with those who were given steroids, than in patients with eosinophilic bronchitis and normal control subjects. So in patients with eosinophilic bronchitis, what separates them from an asthmatic who was not given treatment is that the vascular permeability index is high and VEGF is high. So again, to go back to Chris Breitling, he was the one who published the ACP evidence-based clinical practice guidelines. And this is going to be the last part of the presentation, which I will cover in the coming few minutes, talking about the treatment. So what do we do for those patients? What works? And is that it? Do we have to follow up? What happens? So essentially, he said that Diagnosis made by the confirmation of eosinophilic airway inflammation, usually with induced sputum or BAL, after exclusion of other causes of chronic cough on clinical, radiological, and lung function assessment. The cough usually responds well to treatment with inhaled corticosteroids. The dose and duration differ between patients. The condition can be transient, episodic, or persistent unless treated, and occasionally patients may require long-term prednisone treatment, and I will try to clarify it a bit more. So the literature suggests a great response to inhaled corticosteroids for a couple of weeks. Some people do not respond, and they need systemic steroids. طبعاً الوالدة طلعت منهم, so we had to give her systemic steroids. She responded nicely to 2 weeks of PO steroids tapering, and she had no response to date. So بعد ما أمنا عليها, we can talk about the natural history of non-asthmatic eosinophilic bronchitis. Well, it was variable, as we said. 1 year follow-up of a cohort of 367 patients with normal lung function and eosinophils, 55% remained symptomatic with normal lung function. So they still had cough, but was still with normal lung function. 32% were clear of symptoms, and 13% went on to develop asthma. So actually, patients with a recurrent episode of symptomatic eosinophilic bronchitis appear to be at an increased risk of development of asthma down the line and chronic airway obstruction. So yes, it is in by itself a precursor maybe or risk factor for asthma development. I will finish by a series of summary and recommendations with the level of evidence behind them, and you will notice that most of them are expert opinion, but they come with a high grade of recommendation. So, in patients with chronic cough who have normal chest X-ray findings, normal PFTs, and no evidence of variable airflow obstruction or airway hyperresponsiveness, the diagnosis of non-asthmatic eosinophilic bronchitis should be considered. In patients with chronic cough, normal chest X-ray findings, normal PFTs, and no evidence of variable airflow obstruction or hyperresponsiveness in the airways, the diagnosis of non-asthmatic eosinophilic bronchitis as the cause of the chronic cough is confirmed by the presence of an airway eosinophilia, either by sputum induction or bronchial wash fluid obtained by bronchoscopy, and an improvement in the cough following corticosteroid therapy. So this is how it's going to be done. In patients with chronic cough due to non-asthmatic eosinophilic bronchitis, the possibility of an occupation-related cause needs to be considered because that actually showed a higher signal in some studies. So it is good to ask about the occupation to follow it because that's where the money may be. Again, all these are expert opinions but with a high grade of recommendation. For patients with chronic cough due to non-asthmatic eosinophilic bronchitis, the first-line treatment is inhaled corticosteroid, except when a causal allergen or etiology is identified. This is a low level of evidence. Grade of recommendation is B. And for patients with chronic cough due to non-asthmatic eosinophilic bronchitis, when a causal allergen or occupational sensitizer is identified, avoidance is the best treatment, and I guess this is self-explanatory. If symptoms are persistently troublesome and or the natural history of eosinophilic airway inflammation progresses despite treatment with high-dose inhaled corticosteroids, oral corticosteroids should be given, and that was the case in Our Lady. And at the end, this is what my JJ, my fellow, gave me. Love is not what takes you by surprise and leaves you breathless. It's asthma, my friends. Thank you very much, and I will entertain any questions in the remaining 6 seconds. Bread and butter.
Yeah. Any question, any comment? What about the periphery eosinophilia? Is there any periphery increase?
No, not more than the usual. You don't see periphery eosinophilia.
Any place for dosage of ECP, eosinophilic catabolic protein, can replace the lavage?
They don't talk about it because it's so easy to just do a cell differential, and if you have more than 3%, you have your diagnosis essentially.
Yeah.
Dr. Hassari.
Great, thanks. I looked at the bronchoscopy, the airways were very edematous as well. So I was wondering, on physical exam, there was even forced expiration, no wheezing whatsoever.
Whatsoever.
Metaconin was negative.
Whatsoever. Yani that's why it was a bit shocking. And the cough reflex is terrible.
No.
She was able to complete and everything, but yani Hassan was doing the bronch with me, and she would not hold the cough despite we gave her Dolozal, we gave her nothing. It was not unabated. The cough reflex is just amazingly triggered.
One very curious question. Did she receive anesthetic before?
Yes, she did. She did in inhalers, in combinations, and it was transient because she got a little bit better, then she would stop. And she was not the one who actually, she was in the, that's why a lot of them, I think they go unnoticed. Because a lot of them, we give them combinations. Inhaled steroids are the mainstay. The majority of those patients on inhaled steroids for a couple of weeks will respond and they will have control of their symptoms. But she wasn't one of them. That's why she required oral steroids. And I don't blame actually anyone who saw her before, because she had a normal spirometry and normal everything. So the answer is yes, she got them. She got transiently better, and I mentioned that, but she did not improve enough to just.
Yes. Question.
Test of allergen has no any
benefit. We did test them. It was all negative, and it's not unusual. Oh no! In lots of patients, it is very effective. It's very important in asthmatics. Actually, if you have, depending on the panel that you're testing for, based on your flora and in your country. So, if you test for the most common things, the yield is quite actually interesting. It's about 70%. So, it's very important. And I would urge you to continue to test for combined allergic rhinitis with asthma, because lots of time it's going to help you tremendously in your management. No, we do test very frequently for those.
Any other question? Please.
Those? I gave her 0.75 milligrams per kilo, about 40 milligrams per day. And I tapered it over a couple of weeks, and she went down to 40, 30, 20, 10 off over 2 weeks. And that was all there is to it.
Yes. Last question, Dr. Abhi.
Dr. Hashami. Pardon?
Would you change your way of taking care
of my cough patients?
Yes, to have a new patient with cough.
No, this is the algorithm.
No, you will do the same thing. Yes. I mean, you did a lot of tests and metabolic tests and so on.
Honestly, I'll tell you, the answer is probably yes, because the majority are going to be taken care of by those tests that were done before. This is a sliver of patients that covers about, in most studies, you will find that about 13% of patients had EB. So 13% is 1 in 7 patients. So the answer is you may need to go all the way with these tests, because in 6 out of 7, they will give you the answer before you even get to that point. But if you have to get to a bronchoscopy, yes, you will. Would you do it sooner rather than later? Probably not. If you can get a sputum and send eosinophils, that would help you tremendously. And it's simple. Well, if you do, you can. But if you do, then
you will never know.
And the problem is that patients will ask you, is it going to come back? What do I do? That's the problem. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Josh. Please don't forget to fill in the evaluation form.